passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Ride with John Pollock and Waiting. The A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade. Take the mic.
Hello and welcome to Rewind to Raw. I'm John Pollock, and he is Waiting. Hi, Way.
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm exhausted. This has been a very long week, and I'm at the end.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, I understand. I understand. It seems to... there are a lot of events this weekend.
It was the whole week, I think, and it just was one thing after the other. But I'm not here to talk about how tired I am. It was a lengthy week. Did you have a good weekend?
It was good, yeah, man. Valentine's Day yesterday, so just kind of stayed in, did a bit of ordering in, and watched a bit of TakeOver,
too. Didn't go out for Valentine's Day, didn't go eat anywhere, didn't go party, bar, dancing.
Yeah, no, not this year. I went to the Performance Center, man, the Capitol Wrestling Center. That's where I went for Valentine's Day.
You could have.
I could have, yeah. Well, anyway, what did you think of NXT?
I thought that show was awesome. I thought that was a fantastic, fantastic takeover. I was going in with pretty high expectations for it, and I would say they were still exceeded. The five matches, I didn't really have any complaints about any of the five. I mean, of them, what would you say the weakest was? Like the Women's Dusty Classic? Like that was a pretty good final that they had. I really enjoyed Gargano.
I would say the Triple Threat, probably, if I had to pick the weakest one.
Right. They had that unfortunate table incident that, at the very least, that will probably live on as a meme of some sort.
I'm sure it's already being edited into the next, what is that? The thing Matthew does. Forget the name. Botchamania, of course.
It's coming, yes. I still think, like, even though it was a bit shorter, like, I thought the match was fine.
That's not
MSK...
a complaint these days. Are you kidding me?
The MSK Grizzled Young Vets match, that to me was unbelievably spectacular.
Yeah, excellent match. I mean, I think you had three real contenders for match of the night, and all of them, I think, worthy match of the year contenders. Maybe not the match of the year, but certainly like worthy of, you know, making some lists at the end of the year. And
I put this as a candidate for show of the year. The totality
definitely
of it. Like I thought in the past couple of days, like between the Noah show and TakeOver, I think you got two candidates out of this weekend. So you did get some very good wrestling this weekend, and a huge angle at the end of it with the Disputed Era.
Yeah, that seems to be the new catchphrase, the new tagline. I think overall very satisfying show from a wrestling standpoint and from a storyline standpoint. And I think it really can, you know, kind of push NXT into new territory where maybe the past cycle of TV hasn't really been that good, but a show this strong that I think has, you know, garnered a great deal of attention and a storyline that can potentially be as big as the Undisputed Era breaking up, like that might drive a whole lot more interest. And you have somebody like Walter coming in.
Yeah, I think that you have many different options available to you with this angle. Of course, there's the eventual Cole and O'Reilly match. There's Finn Balor's in the middle of this with the super kick spot that Cole executed. You've got the drama of where Roderick Strong sides with. Those are the kinds of angles you come out of that show and you're very interested to see what this is going to mean for so many different key characters and the matches that can come out of it. Like, that's always a strong show when you have several matches you want to see at the end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And great night for MSK. Immediately, in the span of a month, they really kind of catapulted them to very high level in terms of an attraction on that particular show. And it looks like, we're going to get some form of, we might get Nia and Shayna in NXT. Isn't that the draw?
Well, that's what I told you. It's like coming out of it, all these matches you want to see. So like they set up quite a bit. I mean, for the women's title, like they saved Toni Storm. So you still have that lingering loss that hangs over Io's head from the Mae Young Classic that you can go back with Toni Storm. Tables match. Sure. Why not? And maybe reinforce tables match.
Reinforced tables match, yes.
I really have no complaints. I thought that was a great show. I felt like I had done 1,000 sit-ups, and then Sunday night I had to go do one more, and it was for TakeOver. And you know what? It was a great show. I wouldn't have been able to withstand a crappy show. So it was the complete opposite of that. I love that TakeOver. It was, to me, among, you know, we say it quite a lot that, oh, this is one of the best TakeOvers ever. I don't know if we have the definitive ranking list, but it was pretty great.
It would be quite the list, and really probably feels like a task for our friends at Up Next, who, of course, have a review of the entire show up right now on their feed, which you can also watch at twitch.tv/UpNextPodcast. So shout outs to them and all the great work they've done this weekend.
So one of the major stories from this weekend, and I wanted to spend some time talking about it, and that was the death of Tom Cole, who is a name that we have talked about on our site. I did an interview with David Bixenspan a couple of months back when he did this investigative piece for Business Insider. So I imagine it's a name that people listening to this have at least heard prior to this weekend, but are probably getting more familiar with the story and the details. It's not a fun story to talk about. It's not a era of professional wrestling that I think many want to go back and either revisit or learn about for the first time. It's very dark. I think off the top is the most important part of this is that this was a man who was a husband and father of three daughters who took his life on Friday. And as much as we are going to focus a bit on the entire scandal and revisiting this, I think that is very important to note that this was a father and a husband that obviously had a whole lot of problems. And, from what has come out through his brother, Lee Cole, who just did this interview on Sunday, really going through this entire period with some meticulous details. I mean, it does not paint a very great picture of what that family was put through. And more importantly, the traumatic effects it had on Tom Cole in the ensuing years. And I'd also point out to a reporter by the name of Jamie Hemmings, who wrote this piece over at Slam Wrestling. And she had been in contact with Tom Cole over the past year. And, he was struggling. She very much conveyed that. Like, this was someone that was angry. How much of this story did you dive into over the weekend? And maybe even any questions that you have as well.
Well, I had prior knowledge of it, of course, from your coverage of it and David Bixenspan's article that recently came out. So beyond that, I really just kind of read the news of what happened. It's a terribly sad story. It's one that is shrouded in kind of like small bits of information. And as somebody who, I suppose, is only trying to, piece the pieces together to try to create some sort of semblance of what the truth is, it's kind of difficult for me to have any sort of definitive answer about, like, what to really, like, even to be able to form a true opinion, other than the fact that, it's, like, incredibly tragic that clearly this man was very disturbed by what had happened to him in his life, and this was the end result. So I kind of rely on, you know, journalists such as yourself to try to see what facts that we can learn from it all.
Well, I would definitely encourage people to go out and seek. You know, I did write a story about this on the weekend and did my best to kind of give an overview of the key points of this. You know, there are other reporters out there that have followed the story significantly in depth. I would mention David Bixenspan. I would include, you know, Dave Meltzer, Mike Mooneyham. I mean, there are a lot who have covered this story. And not to go through everything, because it would be the whole show going through all of this. But a couple of notes, because Lee Cole, who is the older brother of Tom Cole, he did this interview with Boston Wrestling on Sunday. It's about a 2-hour interview and pretty much just going through a lot of the key parts. And, you know, Tom Cole, he was first recruited to be part of the ring crew. This was in the mid-80s when he was around 15, 16 years old. And he was recruited by Mel Phillips. And Mel Phillips was a ring announcer, but he also handled the ring crew and recruiting, you know, ring boys that would come and do various tasks. And Mel Phillips is an extremely troubling individual that was involved with this company at this point in time. He was known to have a foot fetish. And Tom Cole, I mean, has, you know, talked about the fact that, you know, that Mel Phillips would try and play with his feet and eventually told him to stop, and then realized, you know, afterwards, like, that was that he got less calls about coming and getting work. And then there was also Terry Garvin, who was an executive at the time with the company. In the, you know, Terry Garvin was somebody that propositioned Tom Cole on two separate occasions, on the second of which, the very next day, this is when Tom Cole had been working out of the WWF warehouse. He was told he was no longer working there because Terry Garvin didn't want him around anymore after a proposition at Terry Garvin's home that Tom Cole turned down. So he left the company and was pretty upset about this. And it was only several years later when he informed his brother of the problems that he had there and what went down. And it was Lee Cole that was the one that reached out it was Phil Mushnick, who was a columnist with the New York Post, and got the ball rolling about taking these stories to the media. And it was a reporter by the name of Jeff Savage who first wrote about these, to my understanding, in San Diego for the newspaper there. And that kind of started a bit of a media whirlwind about covering this. There was a lawsuit that was never officially filed, but that was the direction that things were going, that Tom Cole was going to file a lawsuit against the company. And he ended up, to make a long story short, getting his old job back and got $55,000 in back pay, went back to the company. And it was with the provision that Mel Phillips and Terry Garvin, they were gone from the company. Also leaving the company was Pat Patterson. And Pat Patterson is one that, I mean, in the reporting from Tom Cole, he has said in a deposition that, you know, that Pat Patterson had grabbed him from behind. In later years, he had stated the fact that Pat Patterson never did anything with kids, but he had, you know, he was someone that he said, you know, depending on who you hear from, Pat Patterson has always maintained his innocence. Those close to him have defended him, that he would do things that probably not appropriate by today's standards. I would say for someone in his role that grabbing anyone, regardless, is not a great thing to be doing. But Pat Patterson was part of this and was eventually brought back to the company. And that's essentially where things were in mid-92. By 1993, Tom Cole is let go by the company once again and really kind of disappeared for a number of years until he resurfaced in the late 90s. He did an interview with the Wrestling Perspective outlet and, you know, did a few media appearances. A couple of times, every few years, Mike Mooneyham would write an article catching up with Tom Cole and covered this throughout the years. And it was largely like a story that existed out there, but one that Tom Cole kind of just removed himself from that public spotlight. It wasn't until Linda McMahon was running for Senate that his name popped up again. And that was when a Politico did an article examining this scandal. And according to Lee Cole in this interview with Boston Wrestling, it was a Jerry McDivitt who reached out to Tom Cole, and they were able to get a statement in support of Linda McMahon from Tom Cole. And that was kind of the last people had heard of Tom Cole in the last number of years. But it was this reporter, Jamie Hemmings at Slam Wrestling, that spoke to him over the past year. And one of his final text messages to her was after Pat Patterson had died. And it came across from Tom Cole that it was more so his belief that Pat Patterson was guilty of having knowledge of what was going on. And that was essentially a source of anger for him, that, you know, he was aware of what was going on and the fact that Pat Patterson was being celebrated after his passing. Now, others have said that Patterson was innocent, that he was lumped into a lot of this. So there is a lot of source of, I think, friction based on who you hear from regarding Pat Patterson. So that's a bit of the overview of a very complicated story, especially to go through in this kind of form. So I do encourage a lot of people to go seek out a number of these interviews that are out there and the different pieces that have been put out together. And the details, like, they are very grim. It's a very dark tale that is painted here. And if you go based on what Lee Cole identified in this Boston Wrestling interview, that this was a very prevalent problem beyond just Tom Cole. So it's an awful story, but one that is very important that it does not just get brushed aside or forgotten about. It's sometimes these stories that are the most uncomfortable that have to be confronted and addressed. So I don't really have anything to add beyond that, other than alerting people to different areas to go check out on this story. It unfortunately had a very tragic ending on Friday, as Tom Cole was only 50 years of age, and it was discovered Friday night. That's when the news came out about his passing.
Yeah, our condolences to his family.
We will move on from there. We have a few other topics to discuss. Hana Kimura, there is going to be a tribute show for her May the 23rd that her mother is planning together. This was announced earlier today that she has been in discussions with Stardom and Bushiroad. And this was translated by Farah Akase of the Japan Times, that this is from Kyoko Kimura, her mother. And she said that in speaking to Stardom and Bushiroad, they acknowledged that Hana had been working hard for their company and promised that they will take better care of their athletes in the future after learning their lesson from Hana. They were not able to protect her from the cruel slander and apologized. In the future, for the sake of Hana and other athletes and the fans, I will choose a path of reconciliation and cooperation. She goes on to say the fact that she would be grateful for those that share photos and videos of Hana, and by sending athletes to the memorial event that she is organizing. So that is going to be May 23rd at Corcoran Hall. No other details about availability in terms of being able to watch this tribute show, or in fact, if Bushiroad, I mean, it sounds like she has been in contact with them, if there will be representation from Stardom on this show, which would, you know, you would think that that's where this is leading to. But this will, May 23rd, of course, is the 1 year anniversary of Hana's passing last year.
I certainly hope Bushiroad and Stardom are on board with something like this, and that they would be able to supply, you know, many of Hana's former colleagues and friends to be able to do a show like this. I think it would be a terrible look if they somehow restricted. And I certainly hope that, you know, if there's some form of you know, way to Hanakamura, or sorry, Kyoko did mention that, just to clarify, no money was exchanged in any sort of this, you know, what kind of reads as a bit of a forgiveness letter to, you know, Stardom and Bushiroad. So, you know, as far as we're aware, I certainly hope there's a component to this memorial show that would allow audiences to be able to throw some financial support to her for everything. So, we'll wait the details.
I'm kind of going to approach this next story just with your overall assessment of how it is covered. And that was today that there was all of these photos that were discovered of Chris Jericho's wife, Jessica, attending at the Capitol on January 6th. And I've, as a general rule, I typically believe that family members of people we cover are kind of, it's private, it's off limits. In this one, this is a, you know, it's not like this was necessarily hidden. Like, Jericho has tagged his wife. He has got an enormous following on Instagram. So it was not surprising that this was going to be found. In addition to that, it appears that, you know, she was there with her sister and her mother, which would be Chris's mother-in-law. Now, her mother-in-law, they have also found, you know, a social media footprint that has about as, you know, every conspiratorial meme that you could imagine is can probably be found. Some very offensive posts as well. But in terms of the, like, how much of a public story do you feel that this warrants being? Chris was not at this. I think a lot of people have seen Chris's politics over the last year, and we'll attach that. But as an individual story, like, do you feel this is something that is that should be covered in the same light as a wrestling related story?
Not by a site like ours. I think it's a topic of whatever people want to talk about becomes a topic of conversation. You know, whatever gets retweeted, whatever gets thrown out there that people want to carry on conversation, like on message boards, whatever, sure. But I personally don't think it's a story for a news site. As far as I'm aware, it's like she attended. I don't believe she was a part of the actual riot. So
no indication of that. Yeah,
like there's no to me news there.
It's a different, you know, story if Chris is there, and this wouldn't all be that different. Like, Pat Miletich was seen there at the Capitol, and LFA, which is the MMA group he was doing commentary for, like, they were very uncomfortable because a picture surfaced of Pat standing with another individual who had this patch on that had the acronym for Right Wing Death Squad. And LFA made the call that we wanted to distance ourselves from Pat Miletich, and they were going to investigate, but they took him off their next broadcast. I mean, that is, you know, there was no indication of him participating in anything, but that was enough that they were going to distance themselves from Pat Miletich. I would say this is a much different story if
she's not an employee.
Exactly. And that's that is where,
It goes, you know, like the Gina Carano thing is somewhat related to this. There's still plenty of debate going on about Disney's decision regarding her. But, you know, bottom line is, if somebody is an employee of somebody else, I mean, they have, you know, reason to be able to release you, or at least suspend you from working for that particular broadcast or whatever show it was, for a variety of factors. And I don't think those rules necessarily need to, you know, comply with like somebody breaking the law. They can bench you for any reason. That's what I, you know, see with the Miletich thing, and what I don't see with something like this.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Our final story, Wei, a lighter one. Keiji Muto has signed. I know, when I was putting it together, I'm like, man, these are some heavy subjects that we are covering at the beginning.
It's a good rebound from Valentine's Day, I think.
I understand you did see the Muto match on Friday.
I did, yeah, yeah.
And what did you think?
I thought the guy looked pretty good for his age. You know, I kind of, you know, let it be known on Friday that I'm not against something like this. I mean, I don't necessarily hold the prestige at this point of the GHC title, nor I, you know, from what I hear, Goshi Ozaki's reign was tremendous, had a great, you know, line of matches. But I wasn't necessarily watching, and I wasn't even talking or thinking about it. And a move like this did at least get me to watch a Noah match. So from my perspective, I thought it was a positive move. But if you're somebody who, you know, does hold those things in very high regard, I can see it being a very negative thing. So it's very much, I guess, you know, similar to what the Goldberg thing is, although I find myself more on the kind of casual side of things with that.
I think that their goal was to attract someone like you to be interested in this. I did not have an issue with the decision to go with Muto. I mean, the guy for 58, I think, tried to put out the best match he absolutely could, and I think greatly overexceeded. There were some very scary spots in this match. You know, this was not a flawless match by any stretch, but to me, he worked super hard. They drew over 4,100 people to Budokan Hall for this show, and I think you have to be fair and give Muto at least a significant part of that credit to be able to attract that audience given the state that Noah is in. And I think that ultimately you have to – this is part one of, I think, I will say maybe step two of a significant path that they're going on in terms of this story where Muto beat – Kaito Kiyomiya last August, and it was very much met with resistance that Muto would come in and beat your future star, or to even some current star. But I think that this plays out, that this will be a significant deal, whoever beats Muto. And that takes us to the announcement that Muto, he signed a 2-year deal, and he will defend his title against Kaito Kiyomiya on a national holiday, Wei Ting's birthday, March 14th.
Oh, awesome. What a treat. What a birthday. What a birthday present. I think for me, at least part of the appeal is seeing like how good of a match a 58-year-old can continue to have, and the main event of a very, you know, demanding style and company. So I'll watch that.
Yeah, I would say like if you are interested in jumping into Noah, this is a show to definitely try out. I wouldn't recommend the entire show. Watch the second half of the show, and I think that will give you a strong sense of Noah and their big programs. And on top of it, if you do get the English commentary, the commentary team consisted of Stuart Fulton and Mark Pickering, and I thought these two did a fantastic job. It's the first time I had heard them doing commentary together. And I think that for those that maybe are not familiar with all the stories or characters in Noah, they do a real great job of bringing you up to speed. And, you know, English commentary can serve as that bridge point for a lot of newer fans that want to get into a new international product. But sometimes it's daunting when you don't have that commentary to inform you of a lot of the characters and stories that are going on. So I thought overall it was a very strong show. As I said, I think you could certainly put this as a candidate for show of the year, along with Takeover over the past couple of days. So that
a
is
full review of that show on Post Pro Res, which just released on the free feed this weekend. Also wanted to give some shout outs to John Cena, who gave us Bloodsport 4 as well as Impact No Surrender reviews on the website. So if you go to postwrestling.com, you can read all about those.
And quickly, this week on The Cafe, Tuesday, we are back reviewing another takeover, Our Evolution, from December 2014, featuring Neville versus Sami Zayn. Title versus career. Will Sami Zayn's career end 7 years ago? Find out on Tuesday.
Could be a conspiracy. Also this show featuring the debuts, the NXT debuts, really the WWE debuts of Kevin Owens, Hideo Itami, and Finn Balor. So a really big show, a really, you know, maybe to some, a big turning point within NXT. Of course, with a big show closing angle after the signature appears as well on this one.
And then we've got our regular shows on Wednesday night. We'll be live with Dynamite at 10:15 Eastern for our Double Double Plus patrons. Thursday, it's the return of the Wellness Policy.
Yeah, I'm really excited to bring this one back. Great response to the first one that I did with Jordan about a month ago. It doesn't really feel like it's a month, but we are back 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern on Thursday, live for all cafe patrons, and then we'll make the show free for everybody else on this feed afterwards. We'll be talking about, you know, habit formation, basically how we can kind of use some of the psychology of habit making to our advantage. And we'll be talking in particular, really just like to all of you, but Jordan and I will also be talking about a book called Atomic Habits by James Clear. But more importantly, it's a chance for you guys to call in and to be able to speak to Jordan and myself and really just the entire audience. So 3 o'clock Eastern time, postwrestlingcafe.com for all people who want to tune in live, and then free afterwards for everybody else.
And last thing we'll mention is that Sunday night we'll be live for our double-double ice cap and espresso patrons after Elimination Chamber. So the pay-per-view ends, and then you can jump right onto the live stream with myself and Mr. Ting. Lots of shows this week, more than we can list, but the whole schedule's up at postwrestling.com. Everything from the wellness policy to a review of Central Intelligence. We have you covered this week.
Ooh, amazing. Sweet. And of course, WandaVision this weekend too.
Oh my goodness, yes. Yes. Yeah. It was after an insane number of days, I finally finished everything last night. I think I finished TakeOver around midnight. And then I said, I could go to sleep right now, but I've got to watch WandaVision first. And that was how I ended my weekend.
Well, what are you doing this weekend, John?
This weekend? What does that mean? I don't know.
Can we get John Pollock on WandaVision? Putting you on the spot.
Not this weekend. I can't do this.
Not this weekend. Okay, well.
Maybe another
one. At some point, everybody will do our best.
I'm like one of the people right at the edge of Westview, okay? Right near Ellis Avenue, okay? That's how I feel most nights.
He's playing hard to get, everybody. You got to build long-term for this one.
How many episodes are left? Three?
Three, rumored four. Like, there's a rumored 10th, but who knows if that's true. So,
well, tonight, much like WandaVision apparently is going to be increasing the length to an hour.
Is that true? That's what I've heard. Yeah. The remaining episodes are going to be an hour long. That's the rumor.
Well, that's what Raw felt like doing for the third hour tonight. Let's make this gauntlet match an hour. And that's how the show would end. But the show began with Miz TV. Miz brought out Drew McIntyre and said, John Morrison is off making a diss track for Bad Bunny. So there was no John Morrison on the show. Miz kept calling him Andy, and Drew did not like this. And
Drew,
said
Andy as in like Andrew?
Yeah.
Drew?
Yes.
Right.
And he warns Miz, don't interrupt me. He interrupted him, so he hit him with the Glasgow kiss, and then his signature spot, taking the briefcase and launching it into the abyss.
So last time he actually hit the LED board and actually, you know, took out a bit of the LED board. I don't believe he did that this time, but it was still an incredibly impressive throw.
Yeah, I wonder if this guy did like discus or, you know,
briefcase tossing. It's cool.
It is an Olympic sport, yes. So anyway, Miz recovers in the ring. He says that Drew has to go through five people in the Elimination Chamber just to get to WrestleMania. I don't have to have that same pressure because I have this contract. And just because I say I'm going to cash in my contract doesn't mean I will. I'm thinking on a different level as a master strategist. And I'm putting both champions on notice. And as a result, I'm taking myself out of the Elimination Chamber match.
I thought this was a pretty interesting wrinkle into things. I think if you're the Miz, it's a logical move for the character to make, especially, you know, a cowardly heel one. Like,
why would you want to be in this match to begin with?
Exactly. Well, why would
you? Take yourself out. So I'm glad they didn't do qualifying matches last week. They would have made this one a little bit harder to stomach if the guy was deciding I'm taking myself out after working so hard to get in. But they didn't, so all was fine. Riddle met up with the Lucha House Party to wish his muchachos Happy President's Day. It's like they just get excited now when there's any kind of theme day for a Riddle promo. He asks the Lucha House Party who's their favorite president, listing off Abraham Lincoln with the zombies, Teddy Roosevelt, or his favorite, Harrison Ford, who saved
Which movie is he referencing? Did Harrison Ford play president in a film?
He must have played the president in some film. Maybe the chat room can inform us.
Okay. Air Force One. Oh, right.
Lindsay says...
Everybody's going to type in Air Force One now.
Lindsay says all of those... When he's asked who his favorite president is, he can't name just one because all those presidents are too lucha lit.
You realize at this point, it's like this is all this they have as a gimmick, you know? It's... Lucha Lit is about the most kind of character development that they've had.
Did we really have Lindsay Dorado characterize Richard Nixon as Lucha Lit on this show?
Yeah, I think so.
Riddle made some Michael Hayes Freebird jokes, and then we had a six-man tag. Riddle, Lindsay, and Grand Metalik against Cedric Alexander, Shelton Benjamin, and MVP. The groan you heard was Way, who realizes we're in for a long one here. This one went 10 minutes and 9 seconds. Notable in this match was when MVP got the tag. He came in, went to throw a clothesline, and his knee buckled. And he was, like, limping throughout this time. Even the ball and elbow he had to do on one. He was hopping. It was a hop and elbow.
I didn't really notice.
Yeah, well... Lucha House Party, they run in to help Riddle. There's a lumbar check onto Metalik, and then Riddle hits the final flash, taking Benjamin out, and pins MVP with the floating bro.
Yeah, so he gets the win here. I guess manages to look strong against the rest of the team, but ultimately will succumb to Bobby Lashley.
That's right. Matt Riddle, going into this three-way, gets annihilated by Bobby Lashley on the ramp, and he is placed into the Hurt Lock. And Lashley leaves all three baby faces left for dead here on the ramp. And that is our go-home segment for this three-way match on Sunday.
Again, no Keith Lee on the show.
That's right. There was no Keith Lee. So there was this was all the build we got for this U.S. title match was laying out one of the challengers.
Man, they're making Riddle look so weak. You really have to wonder if this is their way of setting up him beating Bobby Lashley somehow, or pinning Keith Lee or something to allow him to win. It just I'm just kind of continued to be amazed at how weak they're making him look.
The Miz met with Adam Pearce and thanks him for giving him a chance to be in the chamber, but he wants to give back to someone up and coming, someone who's deserving, and suggest John Morrison take his place. Pearce will take that into consideration. Bad Bunny is hanging out with Mandy Rose. This was the most natural backstage conversation where you were just a fly on the wall among two people having a chat. She compliments him and says, points out his own shirt that she's wearing, and then asks him, "Do you have an extra for my partner, Dana Brooke? And good luck on SNL." So she walks off after speaking to Bad Bunny to go inform her partner, Dana Brooke, that she will get her an extra shirt from the guy that will be on SNL this Saturday. And he's like checking her out. And then Damian Priest appears to remind us that he is in fact appearing on SNL this Saturday. Out of nowhere, Tozawa is pinning R-Truth and wins the 24/7 title, then walks into Priest, who drills him into an equipment box, leading to Bad Bunny pinning Akira Tozawa, and Truth yells for Damian Priest to take care of my baby and tell Lorne Michaels to stop ducking his calls. I would love to hear Lorne Michaels get a phone call asking him to do an angle with Bad Bunny on Saturday with Bad Bunny losing the 24/7 title.
I think at most you might see the 24/7 title, like, you know, where like on the stage as a prop or something. But not for 1 second do I think they'll let them have R-Truth pin Bad Bunny or anything like that. Unless, like,
if I was SNL, I would be like, kicking and screaming, saying we are not doing that. But listen, if WWE, it's all gravy for WWE. If they can get an angle on SNL, good for them. I mean, they did do the Michael Che, Colin Jost stuff. But if I'm Bad Bunny, I was like, I do not want to do this on SNL.
Oh, yeah, this. Come on.
Like, man, you've got some real, like, actual currency in celebrity culture. I don't know if you would necessarily want to do this. But for WWE, hey, if they can do it, more power to them in this NBC universe.
I suppose it's possible that I think you could have somebody like a Michael Che or Colin Jost pin him backstage in a segment that you'll air on Monday, for instance. I just don't see it happening on NBC itself, although it's the same family right now, isn't it?
It's, and hey, they are more invested than ever in WWE. So, I mean, it would not surprise me, but, hey, we'll see what they do on Saturday. New Day are with Adam Pearce, and Kofi wants into the chamber. It took them like 10 years to explain all of this. Miz shows up and they argue over whether John Morrison should be allowed into the match. He's a former champion, but Miz reminds us they say he was not a former champion, and that's when Miz says he was a former ECW champion.
Yes, a nice callback.
Yeah, I was waiting for one of them to say, oh, right, he replaced Benoit that night and beat CM Punk to become the ECW champion. That's right. Miz and Kofi gets announced, and Kofi says this will be the start of Kofi Mania 2. Miz says sequels suck. And the New Day says, we know, and lists off all his Marine movies produced by WWE Studios.
It's been a while since we've had one.
Lacey Evans then cuts a promo on Charlotte. She has brought her a sweetheart candy that reads, Bite Me. And Asuka will be giving her a gift of her own on Sunday. So a blatant lie here, knowing what she was about to announce here.
Well, they never canceled the match. I think the match is still set to occur.
Well, I don't know if it will be happening. Asuka and Charlotte against Lacey Evans and Peyton Royce. It is all Peyton. And she is hit with a fallaway slam. Lacey is just hiding in the corner. And Peyton's in here for a long time. Finally, Lacey gets tagged. And Flair approaches her. And Evans goes to the floor. Charlotte's being held back. And Evans says, you can't put a hand on me. Because I'm pregnant. And Rick is just celebrating. He is so excited at this news. Charlotte looks disgusted. And that is how the segment ends. And since that time, Wrestling Inc. and PW Insider are reporting that this is a legitimate pregnancy. I have not confirmed this on my own, but those two outlets reporting this is a legitimate pregnancy. And it looks like this... will probably take Lacey Evans out.
Wow. Okay. Seems like it's an end to the storyline, I guess. And congratulations to her, first of all. That's wonderful news. But congratulations to all of us, because this storyline has been terrible, and didn't really care to see the match anyway. So let's just start all over.
Yeah, it's just going to be... everyone's going to wake up, and it'll be a new set of circumstances beginning next week. Charlie interviewed Sheamus. Guess what? He thinks he's going to win this gauntlet match tonight and the title on Sunday. Kofi Kingston versus The Miz. Miz attacked his neck. Kingston hit this jumping stomp coming back. And then Miz bends his knee over the rope, applies the figure four. Kofi gets to the rope. And then as Kingston goes... After the skull-crushing finale gets countered, there's a roll-up, Kofi lands the Trouble in Paradise, and he pins The Miz in 14 minutes, but hurting his knee in the process. So Kofi, after doing 14 minutes, will have to enter the gauntlet later on. But Kofi gets the spot in the Elimination Chamber. Did this not make the most sense in the world to somehow involve Ali trying to get that spot in the Elimination Chamber that Kofi took from him 2 years ago?
I mean, I really feel like it would have built up to, you know, his attack at the end of the night. But I really do feel like they are going to save that for Sunday. If they don't save Ali attacking Kofi for Sunday, if they don't do it at all.
Oh, you think like Ali takes him out before the match?
Something like that. Sure.
You could do it. I mean, that would progress the story, like the turning the tables.
I actually thought it was really smart the way they got Kofi into this whole scenario, because it is exactly a replica of Kofi Mania and what that was, you know, down to the gauntlet match and then heading into the Elimination Chamber. So, you know, it's something Ali has been reminding us of for several weeks now, and it's the perfect opportunity for him to get some sort of revenge to break off into Ali versus Kofi. So, I liked all of this, you know, in terms of story.
They recapped my hole from last week. So Lana and Naomi did an interview, and Lana, she just wants to be her best. It may have been luck that Nia went through that table last week, but I just want to reach my full potential. Winning is just a cherry on top, and I've got Naomi to keep me in check. And then they both took turns making hole jokes. I thought it was going to be way more annoying this week with the hole jokes than what they did. This was our only really beating a joke into the ground moment.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see if there's any more to come with this whole thing. But I'm seeing them continuing to push Lana as a babyface here, and it's so, like, it's not working at all.
This felt so, like, so over the top that it felt so insincere. Like, she was just, well, like, it was...
You have to believe that it's, like, you know, done to set up some sort of turn, right? As these things tend to usually go in pro wrestling. I just feel like Naomi has come in here after, like, you know, months of being away, and for her to simply be a side character, like a sidekick to Lana, and to me would feel like an incredible waste for her. So I have to think that they've got a bigger role crafted for her than just this.
Randy Orton cut a promo. He's got unfinished business with Drew. He's going to win the gauntlet tonight, and I'll do whatever it takes. He said he lit the fiend on fire. Now he is no more. He's going to win the title, main event WrestleMania, and there will be 5 victims of the RKO tonight. But then he gets cut off, and we go inside the dark Firefly Funhouse, and there is Alexa Bliss. Earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, and proclaims that the fiend will be reborn in the future, and we see her surrounded by candles with a pentagram star drawn on the floor, and she laughs maniacally because she has just taken over the production equipment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. So teasing the fiend's return.
They plugged Young Rock that debuts on NBC tomorrow night. Are you going to be checking this out?
Maybe after the fact. I mean, it looks fun. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to watch it. It's a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
If I can find a half hour, I'll watch it. Shayna Baszler and Lana. Baszler beat the hell out of her. Lana fought back. It wasn't all that great. Bulldog gets stopped. Then suddenly we got a pair of head kicks back and forth, and each go down. Mirko Krokop here, seeping their influence on Lana's attack game. Jax attacks Naomi on the floor, and then Shayna takes off Lana's head with her knee, applies the Kirifuda clutch, and Lana taps out at 4:21, which doesn't matter because winning is only the cherry on top. It's about Lana reaching her full potential.
Man, I'm not exactly sure what the point of all this was, because last week they gave Lana the big table spot, and this week she just
They became
lost.
The number one contenders.
Okay, I guess so. But it's not worth maintaining that momentum?
I guess not. Like, no, it's not about winning. Lana made this clear. It's not about winning.
All right.
Adam Pearce is on his phone. Braun Strowman shows up, and he wants to know why he isn't in the chamber match. He makes his case saying, "I'm a former Universal Champion." And Adam Pearce's response, technically not a WWE champion. And Braun says Shane McMahon needs to make this right, or it isn't going to be pretty around here.
So maybe that's the match that we're going to get.
Shane is just teasing matches with everybody. He's going to work Drew. He's going to work Braun, work Adam Pearce. He's going to just run the gauntlet with people. Omos.
Why not? Yeah, he's
Shane
got
and
with
Omos
everybody.
Together. That would be something.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Maybe Shane, like, you know, ended up not paying him his final check for being the bodyguard at Raw Underground.
Yep. And then after Omos is selling for Shane, he's going to wind up with his fist and say, "You feel unpaid? Well, here comes the money."
Oh, very nice.
SmackDown on Friday will have a six-man tag on the last show before the Chamber. Roman Reigns, Jey Uso, and the man that poured dog food over Roman, King Corbin. I would never in my life team with someone that poured dog food all over me. And they did it to one another. That would be unforgivable.
You know, it's more than a year ago. I mean, water under the bridge.
They will take on Kevin Owens, Cesaro, and Daniel Bryan. AJ and Omos come out. They tell Kingston, just to be positive, this is going to be a warm-up. AJ's going to ruin Kofi Mania 2. He crunched the numbers with Joseph Park. It is statistically impossible that AJ could lose on Sunday. Statistically impossible.
Okay. I'd love to know some of that math, but sure.
I think Joseph Park was the one who did that survey a few years ago and said that there were 75 million WWE fans around the world, or whatever ridiculous number it was. Gauntlet match. This took up the whole last hour of the show. And given when it started, like, you knew it was going to be the whole hour as well. So you really had to brace yourself. I'm going to be interested to see if the gauntlet is enough of an attraction for people to help this third hour, or it was just so telegraphed that, man, it's going to be an hour that people were not going to stick around knowing that it was going an hour.
I wonder, I mean, how have previous gauntlet matches done?
I mean, I don't think they've ever done one to close the show, because the one they did years ago, that one where Seth Rollins went forever and it was, God, that was like an hour and a half match or something. That was in the middle of the show, if not starting it. So you didn't know when the end point was going to come. This one, you knew this was going till the end of the show. So it started with AJ and Kofi Kingston. They went 11 minutes and 4 seconds, and Styles goes to the knee, attacking the previously injured body part. And after Kofi delivers a trust fall off the middle rope to the floor, Woods is playing his trombone when all of a sudden a hand grabs Woods by the throat and Omos lifts him up in the air. We've got the low angle camera shot, so it looked like he was going to lift Xavier through the stadium wall, roof, as some would call it. And then Omos was ejected.
Yeah, they love that Andre shot, you know.
I was talking to someone during Raw tonight, and it's very notable as well, like, how little they are comfortable Omos doing. Like, the extent of his offense is like lifting a guy. They've been very careful in protecting this guy at every turn, like standing tall next to Shane, standing tall next to AJ, lift a guy, say a word. You know what I mean? It's like how many times do we see someone where they just race him into matches and physicality? Like, they have been very, very conservative with Omos.
They've been protecting him, and I can't really say it's been ineffective.
I think it's fine in this role. I guess the question is, like, is it, you know, at what point are they going to just break him free? Because they typically run to that stuff fairly quickly. But they've been very patient in leaving AJ and Omos together as just this act for now. But ultimately, like, their plans for Omos, we will see when they break him off in due time. Kofi fights back. There was this awkward splash onto AJ's back, and he hurts the knee. AJ snaps it and hits the phenomenal forearm. 11 minutes, 4 seconds. AJ Styles advances. Kofi does not.
You know, I thought they were really going to do the Kofi Mania replication, you know, just to set up the Ali thing again, but they wanted to save the Iron Man stuff for Drew. So I have to think that they might be saving Ali for Sunday.
Yeah, Drew was the next one in, and he would go super long here. Him and AJ went over 18 minutes. And the first part of this was Drew just dominating AJ. He was destroying him, so much so that Tom Phillips said, it's shades of the Scottish psychopath, several nicknames ago. There's a forearm off the apron by AJ. This set up the commercial break, and when he hit this forearm, Drew crashes the back of his head into the post that looked not fun. Drew came off the top, was met with an enziguri. The calf crusher is applied. Drew breaks free. AJ goes to the apron for the phenomenal forearm. Drew ducks and hits the Claymore. 18-11, Drew McIntyre advances.
Very good match, I thought. These two given a lot of time, and it was really
Drew was very good in this gauntlet.
Mm-hmm, yes.
For someone that had to be out there for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But he was only the second best part of this match. The first was this inset promo from Jeff Hardy. He says he needs to take more risks because it's all worth it for the WWE title. And then, in a phrase that better be his new trademark, get the t-shirts ready, Jeff Hardy announces to the world, let's get creative. It's time to paint.
What a catch.
No! Let's get creative. It's time to paint.
Best catchphrase of all time.
The best of all time. This is a laugh out loud moment for me. Jeff Hardy, in some ways, Jeff Hardy has to be credited as maybe the most charismatic individual, because only Jeff Hardy can say stuff like this. And there's people that are like, yeah, cool. It's Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy can get away with, let's get creative. It's time to paint.
It makes a lot of sense, I think, for him.
So Jeff hits a clothesline off the apron, and another addition to Jeff's game now, starting his own chant, Hardy, Hardy. And the screen started not yelling Hardy because they can't.
I wonder if he had some sort of communication with the audio guy prior to this. Like, can you get the Hardy chant MP3 file up and running? And this audio guy must have missed it, because it was really strange why he would call for something and not have them play it.
Drew hit a future shock to counter the Twist of Fate. There's a superplex. Hardy avoids the Claymore, hits the Twist of Fate, goes for the Swanton onto Drew's knees, and Drew hits the Claymore, pinning Jeff Hardy. 12 minutes and 3 seconds, which means we're up to 29 minutes of match time so far for Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, long match. Wow.
He got a bit of a breather after this. Randy Orton comes out, and they reminded us, unfinished business. Unfinished business. Orton is quickly sent to the floor, and then every single screen in the Thunderdome is taken over by the image of Alexa Bliss laughing maniacally. And this is so much for Randy. He just cannot concentrate on the task at hand, and he's counted out. And then he goes to return to the ring, and he's hit with a Claymore. This went 64 seconds. Drew McIntyre advances, and Randy Orton loses to the screens.
To the screens, yes. I thought this was a pretty easy way out. You know, gives Drew a break. They did let him have that Claymore at the end, though, just to be able to claim that he did Claymore everybody.
And then Drew McIntyre and Sheamus is the final match. Drew is waiting for Sheamus as his music plays when Sheamus jumps him from behind, and he beats down Drew. He destroys him. Drew is down in the corner. The referee comes over, says, Drew, just tell me, do you want me to start the match? And Drew was huffing and puffing, and he said, you know what? The pay-per-view's on Sunday. I've got to defend this title. It's probably best that I just call it a day. I've been through quite a bit already for the last half hour. Let Sheamus go in last. I think that's the smarter play for me, and I am going to remove myself from this match, and we're just going to give it a go in a couple of days once I have had a chance to recover, maybe get some deep tissue massage. I'm out. I'm done. Very logical explanation.
I can't believe you're able to transcribe all that.
Yeah, well, Drew said yes. I will just ring the damn bell. And Drew fought back. He hit the Glasgow Kiss, the Future Shock DDT. and then a spine buster. He's setting up for the Claymore. Sheamus sidesteps, brogue kick, and Sheamus pins Drew McIntyre. A very rare pinfall loss for Drew McIntyre, but I will say, of all the people in this match, this is the one I think you could justify doing it for, and this was the only way this gauntlet makes sense. You are prioritizing the last entrant on Sunday. So by default, the last entrant in this match needs to win the match to put over the significance of entering last. So they booked this properly. Sheamus wins, didn't really give away the match. It was 5 minutes. And then Sheamus bragged about being the odds-on favorite, even though it's statistically impossible that AJ will lose on Sunday. But he's going to prove tonight wasn't a fluke by becoming champion on Sunday.
It was a very long match, but I think if you watch this gauntlet match on its own, I think you would enjoy it. I thought it was well booked. I think it continues the trend of them really figuring out a good formula to treat these gauntlet matches, putting the focus with that Iron Man spot to one single person. And if you're going to have Drew McIntyre take a pinfall at the end of a match, you have to have it come at the end of a long, grueling performance in order to really protect him. And I thought they managed to do that. I thought Drew did really well throughout the pretty much like the bulk of this hour. And I think the finish builds well to the chamber and builds well to the eventual match between Drew and Sheamus.
I like the gauntlet overall. I mean, it was took the whole last hour of the show, but I thought Drew was very strong. I enjoyed Drew and AJ. Drew and Jeff was pretty good for what it was. Like, really, we just the silliness with Randy, it was a very small part of the match, so I could stomach it.
I didn't mind it so much because, like, I think in a match with so many five of, like, very similar-looking matches, there's room to do something wacky as long as it doesn't end the match. This was just, you know, a bit of an interlude and kind of excused a guy and gave another guy a break. So we'll see. I mean, I'm sure the Fiend stuff will continue into Sunday as well.
So that was the go-home show. I was hardly as just baffled as I have been some prior episodes of Raw. I mean, this one, it's... I can't say I am super enthused for the pay-per-view on Sunday, but I will... Mm-hmm. I was never dumbfounded during... That's not true. I probably was at points, but definitely less than some prior episodes of Raw. So on the scale that we are grading, this was a better Raw.
Well, to me, the most kind of baffling thing was the whole pregnancy deal. But if, you know, the reports are true that it's an actual legitimate pregnancy, then I understand why they did it. The rest of it was, I mean, this is not, I think this is a pay-per-view that is going to definitely suffer from a bit of, like, you know, in between Rumble and Mania lull, like without much.
It's not even the big show in between the two, because you can bet that Fastlane show being the first one on Peacock is going to be the real show that they... I could see that one, like, they want to amp that one up a bit. This is, like, this feels like the ultimate buffer show that I don't think sets up too much.
Of all the championships, I mean, it really does seem unlikely that either of them will change hands come the Elimination Chamber. You have The Miz, you know, continuing to tease this briefcase a whole lot, but it's really hard for me to see either Drew or Roman to be, you know, stripped of their belts. Of all the titles that might change, I definitely see Asuka being the most likely candidate, but she's not even... Well, she is defending. Well, we'll see what happens with that.
Rules doesn't have an opponent right now. I would not want to take the title off Drew now unless they feel they're coming back with Drew and Sheamus a couple of weeks later and they need to do Drew going back for his title. So I don't dismiss it out of hand. But
that
I guess
will be the match at Fastlane.
I mean, it has to be. I would say. Yeah. I think Drew is not able to beat Sheamus on Sunday. It's like if either Sheamus wins or Sheamus is eliminated otherwise, and then Drew needs to get his win back, and that could be Fastlane.
I just hate the idea of, like, Drew kind of, you know, getting that redemptive win, you know, a month before WrestleMania when...
3 weeks before WrestleMania.
Yeah, I just think it really, like, interrupts, you know, a grander story. But then again, I guess what grander story could you have if Drew just retained?
Who are the candidates for you right now as we speak? Let's go with the assumption that it is Drew defending the title at WrestleMania. Who are the prospects to be that match?
Yeah, that's a tough one too, because at this point, I don't see it being somebody like Goldberg. Who else were we thinking? I mean, if Sheamus is going to be, you know, Sheamus is not big enough for a WrestleMania match with Drew. Who else is kind of in the running?
Bobby Lashley.
Yeah, Lashley.
I think he has to be figured in. If you're
unless
going
Riddle
with...
beats him. Well, even if Riddle beats him, I guess it's fine. Riddle can pin Keith Lee, or Keith Lee can pin Riddle. And
maybe Shane comes in, beats Bobby Lashley to get all that heat onto Shane, and then we have Shane laying down the law on Drew McIntyre after last week. How dare you question my booking?
Yeah, one can hope. At this point, I don't think it'll be the Fiend. Man, although I could be wrong. I'm trying to think who else there is.
Those are like of the regular characters. Like that's kind of your lineup, unless we're going outside.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't really know how many options you have.
I guess Lashley seems to be a front runner.
Maybe the Undertaker comes back, tells Drew, "You're the champion, but you guys are soft."
Yeah, you've been playing too many video games.
Yeah. Yeah, where are the guns? Okay, well, that was Raw. We'll preview Elimination Chamber later, maybe on Friday's show. But let's dive into some feedback and see what everyone thought about tonight's episode of Raw. Is this one going to get a pass?
Well, I just saw it.
That's a no. 4.58.
It's not a very exciting time, I suppose. And okay,
for the state of Raw, they'll take a 4.58. Like. Yeah. Fair enough.
All right. Shall I start, John?
Sure.
We got a Paul from New Jersey who says, "I would like to take this moment to apologize to both Jonathan and Waylon. In the initial few weeks, I defended the Evan Charlotte program. What a cosmic ballet. On a positive note, I actually enjoyed Miz tonight and was stoked Kofi was added to the chamber. I enjoyed the gauntlet match, but the Lacey Evans thing really derailed the show for me. I'm getting flashbacks to the birth of a hand." Yeah, well, we shall see what happened. What was worse, the 50 First Dates promo between AJ and Ricochet or Riddle talking about president? Ooh. And two, who won the Royce Evans versus Charlotte Oscar match? Pregnancy? Was there a count out?
Yeah, it was a count out.
Was it? Or was it stopped by pregnancy? By sudden pregnancy?
Well, it's going to be a count of 9 months. both promos were awful. I would say the Ricochet 50 First Dates was worse.
We'll see if any of them make worst of. I guess there are plenty of candidates this year.
I wasn't, who is that guy though, by the way? Ricochet. He rings a bell. But I watch Raw, so I'm not familiar. Let's go to Ben from Vancouver. Yeah, a lot of people here are talking about the Lacey Charlotte program. None of it makes any sense. Well, I think to the defense, like as the reports have stated, this being legitimate, like they were really just having to, you know, essentially come up with something right at the last second here. The rest of the show was fine with the gauntlet being solid, a 5 out of 10 show. Where do you guys see Ricochet for WrestleMania? At this point, I can't see much more than the Andre Battle Royal. Yeah, I don't know if on February 16th they're sitting down and they're bringing everyone together and saying, "All right, guys, we need a battle plan for Ricochet for WrestleMania." I don't know where this guy is going to end up. At this rate, yeah, the Battle Royal would seem a likely destination for him because he's got nothing going on now. That's not to say that after this pay-per-view cycle they might reintroduce him on Raw, get him into some kind of a program. You do have two nights, so that's going for him. It's sad that he doesn't have more, something more of substance, but 2 months out, there does not appear to be anything for him.
Possible, but I would say unlikely. It doesn't seem like he has any sort of storyline building at all. But I, you know, if they do any sort of like intercontinental title or what is it, US title ladder match or something, I think that would be a great fit for him. But this year, who knows? Yeah, what else was it going to be? So my question, John, like, how are they going to pay off this Ric Flair thing? You know, so they're running with the idea that it's Ric Flair who got Lacey pregnant. If in fact she won't be back and actually has the baby, like, will they try to carry this through and explain that it's Ric Flair's baby after 9 months?
Like they did with Stacey Keibler when she then revealed the baby on Nitro, and it turned out to be an 8x10 of Sean Stasiak that she gave birth to.
Ooh. Yeah, I don't know.
So Flair's
like, how will they resolve this story, you think?
Well, Lacey announced she was pregnant. Rick assumes he is the father. So in storyline, we either have to believe that they have slept together, or Rick is so delusional that he thinks he's the father, even though Lacey has never slept with him. And that's the end of Lacey informing the old man that he's out of his mind. I would never be with someone like you. You are not the father. And Rick, everyone feels sad for Rick.
See, but because of how like much they kind of strayed away from, like, you know, Rick explicitly saying that they were in a relationship, and that as most as they've hinted is that Lacey just, you know, might have the hots for Ric Flair. I don't feel like they would put that imagery into people's minds, at least as blatantly as, you know, that would be. So I feel like it'll have to be Rick like revealing that this was just a ruse somehow. And the child, like, will instead be, man, it's awful any way you try to twist it. I mean, it's just a bad story all around.
Is it worse than the WCW one where it was, we reviewed this show.
If that's your basis of comparison, then the answer, it doesn't matter.
Well, it's not even the 8x10. Like, that's what they ended up doing. But the original idea was Stacy and David Flair had the wedding on Nitro, and Stacy is pregnant and she runs out on David. And the idea was that it was going to turn out that Rick was the father who had who had slept with David's fiance.
You know, I don't know why Flair was so happy about it. I'm like, doesn't the guy already have enough like alimony to pay?
Well, not a track record of great angles involving Ric Flair and pregnancies.
All right, one more piece of feedback, and this comes from Kate from Montreal, who says, it seemed like Raw was basically two shows tonight. The Gauntlet match, including the Kofi Miz warm-up and everything else. The Gauntlet part was great as long as you just ignore the Randy Orton bit. I felt like Kofi, AJ Hardy, Drew, and Sheamus all came out looking like solid contenders. Honestly, though, I'd be surprised if the actual chamber match was as good as what we got tonight. I would rather have seen a good singles programs for Drew, but such is wrestling fan life. Not sure if you guys watched the opening round of the AEW Women's Tournament in Japan, but I will say that I do not want to hear another word about the failings of AEW's women's division, while Raw continues to serve up Lana, Lacey Evans, and Nia Jax as their lead performers. I've heard some talk that Randy might win the title on Sunday so that Edge can challenge him at WrestleMania. That seems like it would clash with Randy and Fiend, but at the same time, I can see it appealing to upper management at WWE. Do you think it's a likely scenario?
I don't.
I don't think so either.
I think Edge and Reigns is a fantastic direction to go with, and I see no reason to change that.
Yeah, at this point, I think they've teased us so much with Reigns and Edge, and the audience seems to be like clamoring for that match amongst all the other different scenarios, that I can't see them taking that away at this point. I caught a little bit of a glimpse of the women's tournament. I have not really sat down and properly watched all the matches, but I heard pretty good feedback to most of them. So
I haven't seen it. I heard Excalibur was great on commentary, just doing it solo.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was. But
how did it look in the dojo?
It looked like, you know, a tape that, like, a Japanese empty arena setting, warehouse match. Yeah. So we'll probably talk a bit about them on Wednesday.
There you go. And in regards to Randy and the Fiend, I would, like, they have pushed this for so long. It's almost, I wonder if they just carry this right to Mania, like beyond Fastlane. It almost seems like this is a Mania program, that the big blow off gimmick match, whatever they come up with. It feels at this point like they might as well just push it all the way to Mania. Now that you've gone this far, this was thought to just be a distraction for Randy until Edge comes back, but it's obviously they're going in different paths.
For sure, I think so. Especially because it's a double Mania night. You know, you're probably not going to have enough time to build to anything bigger than something like this. I think if, you know, the only task is to delay them through Fastlane. Number one, you don't have to even have them have a match at Fastlane. But number two, you can do some sort of, I don't know, mixed tag situation or some sort of like build up match to get to it. I don't know many people that would be looking forward to Orton and Fiend again. It's happened many times. I mean, the results this time around haven't been great. They've had already a WrestleMania stinker between the two of them. They could do a Firefly Funhouse match. You know, yes. I think really that's what it should be, a cinematic match.
I think it would have to be. Yeah. I think that's the whole crux of the story of what it leads to.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks everybody for the feedback. It's another packed week here at postwrestling.com. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in live tonight. We're back live Wednesday night. We're live Friday night. We're live Sunday night. Can't get enough of us.
Yeah, we'll be here all the time, everybody. So, anything else to promote?
I was going to ask you about WandaVision, but I'm in the midst of listening to what you think about WandaVision. So we don't need to be retracing your steps.
What about the what else have you been watching? The Wire? How's that?
I have been watching The Wire. That's about during my day now. My free time is limited to about I get about an hour each day. So maybe a little more in the evening, depending if it's a non wrestling evening. So in the evening, try and watch an episode of The Wire. We're almost done season one.
Okay, cool.
I don't think I'm allowed to talk about it because it's only been 19 years since season one aired. So
spoil the shit out of it. Who cares at this point?
Well, there was just a shooting. A cop is clinging to life. We're going to find out. Think she's going to make it. Think she's going to pull through. But it's excellent. I think that this series, like, I always knew it was amazing. Like, this is one of the shows. It's one of those, you haven't seen The Wire? The fuck is wrong with you? You haven't seen The Wire? Like, why are you here talking to me when you could be at home watching The Wire? It's one of those, like, okay.
It's the poutine of TV.
Oh, it's not the poutine of TV. This is good. There's so many characters to keep track of, but not in a confusing way. Like, they do a very good job. I don't know what future seasons will get like, of how significant it'll get once they get out of these districts into others and such. I saw a map that consists of what the whole show covers and stuff. So it's pretty advanced, but this is high quality. I would certainly recommend Way, but I wouldn't judge you. You watched the first episode recently?
Couldn't get into it. Yeah. Couldn't get into it. How long did it take you to really get in?
I was in pretty quick. You know, the funny thing, you know what? I will take that back. Several years ago, me and my wife has watched this show many times. Like, she loves it, and she wanted to get me into it. And we watched the first episode, and I had a similar feeling like that. Like, it didn't grab me instantly, but I didn't hate it. But this time around, I was in from the get-go. I was looking for a new show, and I really got into this one pretty quick.
Did it help that she was able to explain some of the things to catch you up or anything like that?
No, I don't know what it was like the first time. Like, it was not like I had a negative experience to it. It was just like we watched it, and then for whatever reason, we didn't pick it up instantly, and I kind of just moved on from it and didn't have that desire to, oh, we've got to get back to watching The Wire. But this time, I'm really into it. I think it's like five seasons altogether.
Well, continue to give us some updates, John. I think even if I'm not watching it, a lot of people would be really.
The casualty has been books, though. It's like I can't do both. I can't watch a series and try and read a book at the same time.
Oh, with only an hour a day, it'd be tough. You have to choose.
There's going to be a snowstorm. Are you aware of this?
Yes, I am. Yeah, right now, right?
I think it's happening now. It was supposed to happen this morning, but it's coming overnight. It looks pretty insane.
We're pretty much like knee deep in like bad weather right now. Like, this is probably like the worst stretch we've had since the winter started. So, don't really look forward to shoveling, but it's got to be done.
All right. Well, I just wanted to chat.
Yeah, likewise.
You thought about the snow?
Yeah, what else?
Shows you're getting into?
What else is going? TV shows?
I'm not watching anything. Like, literally nothing.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking about this on WandaVision, Total Bellas, but Pauline's got me watching The Bachelor. It conflicts with Raw, so it's like a Tuesday thing that we do, and it's as awful, and I feel terrible about it. I'm so ashamed. Here I am, like, not getting into The Wire instead of watching The Bachelor. But it's good, trashy fun, I guess.
Where are we at? How much, how many numbers are left?
Supposedly, this is like the biggest season of The Bachelor ever, like the most contestants they've ever had. And they'll chop off like five people at a time, like every single episode. And people aren't just getting picked off because they're being like traditionally eliminated. They're like getting evicted or at least like taken off because they've, you know, been caught lying. They've been caught spreading rumors. They've been like just some people quit because they can't deal with like the Bachelor flirting with the other girls. So there's plenty of drama on the show.
Wow. Who's the front runner? Who are you picking?
I don't know, dude. Love is complicated. It's hard to say. It's hard to know what this dude is thinking. He's a very hard to read man. He's equally flirtatious and seems to have connection with like a number of people. It's an awkward way to date, I think.
On The Bachelor, it's an awkward way to date. Yeah.
Weird. Yeah.
I would say so. Well, good luck on that. I hope you keep us updated.
No, I don't think I will.
Several more weeks to go. I could bring it up every now and then. Get your thoughts.
Well, that'll be our ratings discussion. What was Rob against? You know, who was being evicted at what time?
Well, that's going to bring an end to the show, folks. Me and Way are off. We have been. How do you get voted off The Bachelor? Is it you hand them the rose or you take the rose?
You don't get a rose. That's how
you don't get a rose. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, on that note.
This is a weird show.
Well.
We've had a lot of different topics.
My mind was just melting by the end of Sunday. I was like, I have watched so much wrestling and so much fighting, and I've talked for so much, and I've written so much, and I know, boo-hoo. I am being transparent with.
No, we want you to be transparent. And number two, I think, nobody wants you to exhaust yourself. So if you need help, there are people that are willing to help.
All right. I am going to give up The Bachelor, number one. I think that's too daunting to jump into that world.
We want you to watch more of The Wire, for sure.
All right. I will do that. So maybe Wednesday, Wake and Run through Dynamite, and I will give everyone an update on McNulty and where things stand after season one. That is
we'll
it, everyone.
Back and forth. I'll go through a match. You go through a season.
And then I'll go through a segment. That'd actually be pretty funny. Could either be really good or really bad.
We need probably to really start being more experimental with these reviews, I think.
It's like, why have both of us watch the same thing? I would much rather... You know what? As we've talked about, I think that would be the way. If we had ever had to do Raw and Nitro on the same night, I think that would have been the way to go. You review one, and I listen to your review blind, and then vice versa.
It would be really interesting. I think that would be a really bad way of. You know what? Yeah, it would have to be done. Yeah, for sure. We watch one segment, talk about one segment, and talk about what was on the other. It would be an interesting experiment.
Thank you to everybody for joining us in the live Zoom room tonight. We appreciate all of you. We'll be back Wednesday night, 10:15 Eastern time, and Rewind Away drops on Tuesday. NXT R Evolution, with the letter R and the word evolution, and together it can be interpreted as our evolution or a revolution.
That's brilliant.
Unbelievable brilliant use marketing. Of font.
Not
text.
Since Korn has somebody made such great use of the letter R.
R. Evolution.
Yeah. All right.
That's it. I'm done, folks. Good night.